Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls Media Roundtable. Today's guest, Brett Murphy, reports that while Israel has its own arms industry, the country relies heavily on American jets, bombs, and other weapons in Gaza. Since October, the United States has shipped more than 50,000 tons of weaponry, which the Israeli military says has been crucial for sustaining the Israeli Defense Force's operational capabilities during the ongoing war. Brett Murphy's new ProPublica investigation has found that U.S. Ambassador to Israel, Jack Lew, urged Washington to give thousands more bombs to the Israelis because they have a, quote, decades-long proven track record of avoiding killing civilians. Brett Murphy also found that weapons contractors and lobbyists have helped push along valuable sales by leaning on State Department officials and lawmakers whenever there is a holdup. After State Department officials spent months working through weekends and after hours on arms sales, the Israelis sent cases of wine to them just before Christmas. Last week, ProPublica's Brett Murphy detailed how the U.S. government's two foremost authorities on humanitarian assistance, USAID and the State Department's Refugees Bureau, concluded that in the spring, Israel deliberately blocked deliveries of food and medicine into Gaza and that weapon sales should be halted. But Secretary of State Antony Blinken rejected those findings and weeks later told Congress that the State Department had concluded that Israel was not blocking aid. The death toll in Gaza has reached 42,000, but the true death toll could exceed 186,000, according to The Lancet. Oxfam just came out with a report that found more women and children have been killed in Gaza by the Israeli military than any other recent conflict in a single year. Brett Murphy is a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter on ProPublica's national desk. His latest piece, you can find both of them at kalw.org, click news, and then your call. Hi, Brett. Thanks for your reporting, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Rose. Thanks for having me.
Well, your latest piece just came out today called Inside the State Department's Weapons Pipeline to Israel. And the article draws from a trove of internal cables, email threads, memos, meeting minutes, and other State Department records, along with interviews with current and former officials throughout the agency, most of whom spoke on the condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to speak publicly. So you did a lot of background work on this. Tell us more about that first, Brett.
Sure. Yeah. So there's people all over the State Department in several different bureaus in Washington and in Jerusalem as well, who have been trying to raise alarms for months now about these arms sales. And as you know, and as I think a lot of your listeners know, the policy has not changed very much. And a lot of these folks have been feeling pretty profound frustration about it. And a lot of their efforts have been documented in these emails and memos, cables, other things. And what they're saying is that the reality that senior policymakers know to be true, the evidence that the experts present in reports and meetings, is not being incorporated into the policy. I think the cable that you just mentioned from Ambassador Lew in January, that cable was pushing Washington to send thousands more bombs to the Israelis. And at the time, there were more than 25,000 Palestinians dead in Gaza already. His own staff, Ambassador Lew's own staff, had raised concern about civilian deaths. And the staffers, his own staffers, their homes had been bombed in Gaza. So what these people are saying to me is that even though all this stuff has been documented, all this evidence has been documented, they are choosing to instead say that there is no problem and the Israelis' human rights record justifies sending more bombs to them, which has been a pretty large point of frustration.
Can you tell us more about Jack Lew? Who is he?
Yeah, he's President Biden's ambassador to Israel. He's been in Democratic circles a long time. He was President Obama's Treasury Secretary, has a history in the State Department, other government agencies, worked in corporate America for a while at Citigroup. He's also in a private equity firm. So he's a kind of a rising star in the Democratic Party.
So as you say, officials and his own staff have highlighted attacks where large numbers of civilians died. Still, Jack Lew and his senior leadership argued that Israel could be trusted with a new shipment of bombs. These are known as, I've never heard of this, GBU-39s, which are, quote, smaller and more precise. Israel's Air Force, they asserted, had a decades-long proven track record of avoiding killing civilians while using the American-made bomb and had, quote, demonstrated an ability and willingness to employ it in a manner that minimizes collateral damage. You report that while that request was pending, the Israelis proved those assertions wrong. They repeatedly dropped these GBU-39s on shelters and refugee camps that it said were being occupied by Hamas soldiers. They killed scores of Palestinians. And then in early August, the IDF bombed a school and a mosque where civilians were sheltering. This is really horrifying, just to let listeners know. Sorry, I should have mentioned this in the beginning of the show. But at least 93 died. Children's bodies were so mutilated, their parents had trouble identifying them. So tell us what else you found about this, Brett.
I mean, the point I think that a lot of these folks at the State Department have made, other agencies too, is that it doesn't really matter the size of the bomb if you're still using it this way. The GBU-39, when we say it's smaller than a 2,000-pound bunker buster, which is true. It's more precise, smaller blast radius. But what happened after this request from Ambassador Lew is that the Israelis used the same kind of bomb, the GBU-39, on these locations that you just listed off. Ambassador Lew had said they have, you know, this track record of using this bomb, this munition, responsibly. In fact, at the time he sent that cable, Amnesty had documented cases in which civilians had been killed with this exact type of munition in the past before that cable was sent. So the point being was that the evidence actually undermines what Lew was endorsing in the cable. And this is what has been bothering so many people, I think, around government, is that if there's evidence to the contrary that undermines the policy, then that should be factored in where they think it's not, and the arms pipeline has continued moving without hesitation now for months.
Reading that horrible line about how children's bodies were so mutilated that their parents had trouble identifying them, it made me think about a show we did. I can't even believe it's been this long. January 10th, more than 1,000 children in Gaza have lost one or both legs since October 7th, according to Save the Children. So this was in January. I haven't been able to find any updated numbers. It is so obvious, Brett, that U.S. officials see these reports. They see the horrific videos that we've all been watching over the past year. And even though they know what's going on there, they are still sending these killing machines and these weapons.
We have emails from around this time, early this year, from diplomats at state who were documenting each one of these incidents, the video coverage, social media coverage, Arab media coverage of these incidents, pictures and videos, very graphic detail, sending them back to Washington in cables saying, we have a problem here with our credibility. The Arab world is seeing these images every day, and they are accusing the U.S. of abetting these human rights abuses. And in response, the diplomat who was sending those cables was told to stop sending them. She did not need to send those graphic images anymore. So I don't think it could be argued that the leaders in the U.S. don't know the status of things. There have been people, working level experts throughout the government, certainly within the State Department, who have made it known. They've made it their job to make it known.
Who told her to stop sending the cables?
Her superiors inside of the bureau she was in. So this was in the State Department.
So have these cables been stopped since then?
They are still, I asked the State Department about this. They said they are still incorporating other information from the Arab world into their kind of internal analyses frequently. I think that could mean a lot of things. You know, it could mean some of these more generalized reports coming from regional hubs, maybe out of London or something, where they are looking at broadly Arab media coverage of a lot of different things. But these snapshots that she was sending, her name is Hala Al-Rarit, that she was sending were very specific to Gaza. She was compiling them herself. She was told to do that. As far as I know, those specific reports have not continued.
We're speaking with Brett Murphy, a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter on ProPublica's National Desk. And we're talking about the investigations he's been doing about U.S. arms sales to Israel. If you have any questions for Brett about what he found, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Brett, this is a question a lot of people have been asking. Given what we are seeing, given the information that's come out, the reports that have come out, again, reporters, international reporters, anyone outside of Gaza is not allowed to go in because the Israeli government will not allow it. But so much has gotten out from Palestinian journalists. And then you have so many reports from Oxfam, Save the Children, you name it. So given all of that, based on the reporting you've done, the off-the-record anonymous interviews you've done, the digging, why is the United States still sending these weapons, given all the devastation and death that we have seen?
I mean, that's the $3.8 billion question. That number is how much we give the Israelis on a kind of yearly average in American taxpayer dollars. That money is used to buy American weapons and bombs back from military contractors stateside. I've been asking pretty much everybody I talk to why changes have not been made to the policy. If you know this evidence is out there, they point to it's not even like a liberal democracy argument. It's more realpolitik to them. They are said it's clearly undermining U.S. interests at this point, at this stage. Our credibility in the region, especially in the global south, has been turning, and it really undermines sort of the rules-based order that we have been, you know, as a country positing for decades now. In addition to that, there's a legal framework that a lot of these people say should be applied. There are several laws on the books, the Foreign Assistance Act, chief among them, and the Leahy laws, the Biden administration's own conventional arms transfer policy. They all have language in there that requires the U.S. government, usually through the State Department, to cut off sales, to cut off military sales when there is clear risks or past patterns of human rights violations, of cutting off humanitarian aid, which is what I wrote about last week. So all these tools, they say, have not been applied. And when I ask them why, it's some mix of an answer. It's a little squishy, but they say it's really a matter of political will inside of the government. It's very difficult to apply these things. That's why there's a double standard for Israel, because the department itself is at odds with the administration's own policy, and the policy is to continue supporting Israel.
And as you report, the Biden administration's repeated willingness to give the IDF a pass has only emboldened the Israelis, according to experts you spoke with. One State Department official said, quote, if there's never any consequences for doing it, then why stop doing it?
This is the point a lot of folks have been making, is that when we don't apply the policies and laws of the government, it sends a message to whatever country, whatever foreign ally or partner, that there won't be consequences. And if there aren't consequences, that they are, you know, tacitly allowed to continue doing it, which is not good for, it's not good for the U.S., it's not good for, you know, certainly in this situation, the Palestinians, and it's not good for the Israeli military if they know, you know, in their ranks it doesn't matter. This is what the experts have been saying now for months, and this is why they're so worried about the failures of the administration to apply its own laws and policies.
So this brings us to your recent investigation. You revealed that in the spring, USAID and the State Department's Refugee Bureau, two of the U.S. government's foremost authorities on humanitarian assistance, concluded that Israel had deliberately blocked deliveries of food and medicine into Gaza. You report their conclusion was explosive because U.S. law requires the government to cut off weapons shipments to countries that prevent the delivery of U.S.-backed humanitarian aid. USAID officials wrote that because of Israel's behavior, the U.S. should pause additional arms sales to the country, but Secretary of State Antony Blinken and the Biden administration did not accept the findings. So tell us more about what you learned, and let's start with the USAID's 17-page memo.
Yeah, so this was a very important moment in the spring. Secretary Blinken was required to deliver a report to Congress. And in that report, he had to say whether or not the U.S. government believed the Israelis were deliberately blocking aid into Gaza. The reason why that was so important is there's a law. It's 620I of the Foreign Assistance Act. And the law says if that is in fact the position of the U.S. government, then the U.S. government is required to stop supplying military assistance, weapons and bombs to that same country. What he was told ahead of that report, ahead of his statement to Congress, was the Israelis are blocking humanitarian assistance. He was told this by USAID. They sent a 17-page memo detailing examples, instances of the Israelis turning away trucks full of supplies, sitting on food depots, targeting aid workers and airstrikes. It was extremely detailed evidence kind of supporting their assertion that this was happening. At the same time, Blinken's own Refugees Bureau, in a separate email thread I got, said just as much. They said, the head of that bureau, the assistant secretary, said, we believe that 620I, this law, has been triggered. And that was in the context of close to $1 billion that the department was about to release for the Israelis to use to buy bombs and weapons. So two key conclusions brought by the government's foremost experts. This is who the U.S. government charges with facilitating aid into war zones and after catastrophes. USAID has been doing this for decades all over the world. Since we reported that story, there's been other reporting from both The Atlantic and The Washington Post about Blinken's own conversations with Prime Minister Netanyahu, who told him as much at the time, according to those reports, that there was enormous political pressure inside of Israel not to allow even, I think it was a single bottle of aspirin into Gaza. And this information is critical because what, as I said earlier, what Blinken ultimately told Congress was the opposite, that it was not his assessment that the Israelis were blocking aid.
You report that USAID, which is led by longtime diplomat Samantha Power, said the looming famine in Gaza was the result of Israel's, quote, arbitrary denial, restriction, and impediments of U.S. humanitarian assistance. It is, USAID concluded, one of the worst humanitarian catastrophes in the world. How are U.S. officials supposed to respond after a report like this comes out?
I don't really know. I know that inside of USAID there has been frustrations as well. Samantha Power is an atrocities and genocide expert. There's a wonderful article today in New York Magazine by John Geyer profiling her. So I think a lot of people have been frustrated by what they know to be right-minded leaders within their departments. But I think what a lot of folks are feeling is that they are unable to affect the change that they would like because of the policy direction of the administration. And this has been a point of frustration now for months that I think a lot of folks are having trouble reconciling with that.
What did Samantha Power have to say in response to this?
She didn't respond to our reporting. The USAID has said that she has been shooting straight with the administration. And to that point, her report, her memo to Secretary Blinken over this humanitarian assistance issue that I reported on, it was a a unsparing and unblinking assessment of what was going on. They did not hold back. They said, this is, we believe that military assistance should be paused, and here's why. And they laid out the evidence. So I think in that situation, certainly there was no hesitation to speak the facts that her own experts had been gathering on the ground.
So if Antony Blinken took these recommendations, the U.S. would be required to cut off weapons shipments to Israel. He rejected them. He sided with the Israelis and told Congress weeks later, quote, "We do not currently assess that the Israeli government is prohibiting or otherwise restricting the transport or delivery of U.S. humanitarian assistance." Tell us more about that, and what was the reaction?
He was asked about this the day after we published. He was in New York for the UN General Assembly, and he was asked on some morning shows, you know, what gives. The spokesman, Matthew Miller, has it as well at the podium. The answer has been that it's his call to make, and he's right. It is. It's his decision. He was given multiple assessments from multiple different bureaus, other agencies, and he had to weigh those against one another and then make a call, which is what he did. What I would say and what we reported is that the two bodies that presented him this unequivocal position of, yes, the Israelis are blocking aid, these are the ones charged with knowing as much. It's their job to get the aid in. It's their job to assess what obstacles and challenges they're facing and why. So they would kind of know better than anyone, right? I saw some of the other assessments he was given. None provided anywhere near as much detail in as to why that wasn't the case. For example, back to Ambassador Liu. Ambassador Liu sent the cable to Secretary Blinken on this very issue, and he said, in that cable, we should side with the Israelis. They have promised to facilitate, not block aid going forward. They've opened this entry point. They've been saying they want to allow in more trucks. We should believe them. We should not cut off aid. That's what Ambassador Liu told Blinken. That's what Blinken ultimately told Congress. Since then, I should point out, a lot of the aid groups that are trying to get food and medicine in, including Oxfam, has said the situation is really no better. It's the aid is nowhere near where it needs to be. The Israelis are turning the spigot off and then on. The famine has loomed at different times. So this has really not been resolved, even though the State Department says that they effectively use their leverage in this situation. A lot of those aid groups disagree heartily.
We have one clip. This is Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who was asked about the report on CBS Mornings.
So this is actually pretty typical. We had a report to put out on the humanitarian situation in Gaza and what Israel was doing to try to make sure that people got the assistance they needed. And I had different assessments from different parts of the State Department, from other agencies that were involved, like USAID. My job is to sort through them, which I did, draw some conclusions from that, and we put out our report. And we found that Israel needed to do a better job on the humanitarian assistance. We've seen improvements since then. It's still not sufficient.
So that was Secretary of State Antony Blinken being asked about the report on CBS Mornings. Brett, we have an email from a listener who says, why aren't our California senators and representatives holding hearings and holding Blinken, Biden, and Harris accountable to U.S. laws, including the Leahy Law? Have you talked to anybody about this, or have you spoken to any politicians to get a response to your reporting?
Yeah, there's a minority on the Hill, there's a vocal minority on the Hill, who have called for as much, who have said that, you know, if these laws have in fact been triggered, then we need to start withholding assistance, military assistance. But that's a minority. The most of the politicians have not made such calls. So going back to a point earlier about what those inside of the State Department are frustrated by, it's a matter of political will. And I think to a large extent that's true on the Hill as well.
Brett, what are you working on now? Are you going to continue? It seems like you have a lot of contacts now inside the State Department. Are you going to continue exposing what's really happening there and relating to weapon sales?
Yes, I am continuing to work on all this, especially in regards to arms transfers around the country. I'm continuing to report in the State Department on Secretary Blinken, on Ambassador Liu, and other powerful political appointees in the administration. So I would encourage any of your listeners, if they happen to know something or know someone who might, to please reach out to us. That would be great.
Brett Murphy is a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter on ProPublica's national desk. His two pieces are called Inside the State Department's Weapons Pipeline to Israel and Israel Deliberately Blocked Humanitarian Aid to Gaza. According to two government bodies, Antony Blinken rejected them. Brett, thank you for your reporting and thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Rose, for having me.
Thank you. And before we end this segment, we want to play a clip from Starving Gaza. This is a new documentary from Al Jazeera English's Fault Lines. We will hear from Palestinian Dr. Ahmed Nasser, who is trying to save severely malnourished children in Kamal Adwan Hospital in North Gaza. And thanks to Democracy Now! For this clip.
I don't think anyone in North Gaza has enough food to eat. We have a new malnutrition case. The number of cases is beyond the malnutrition clinic's capacity.
Every day, the cries of hungry children fill the halls of Kamal Adwan Hospital in North Gaza. Some children here at the malnutrition clinic have never known a full meal in their lives. After the Hamas attacks on October 7th, Israel cut off fuel, food, and water from Gaza. Within weeks, starvation had spread in the north. Israel doesn't allow foreign journalists into Gaza, so we worked with Palestinian reporters who filmed for us at Kamal Adwan Hospital in June.
How often does he have fever?
He had a high fever and diarrhea all night.
Abdul Aziz is 5 months old and starving. Dr. Ahmed Nasser has been taking care of him with what little resources the hospital has on hand.
Should I be concerned? He had a fever for 20 days before I brought him to the hospital.
The situation is very serious. The child cannot absorb anything in his body. Anything that enters his body is excreted without benefit to him. His mother brought him to the hospital because the child was suffering from chronic diarrhea, vomiting, and high body temperature. Many times we were shocked to see 30 to 40 cases in one day for the same reason.
Thanks to Democracy Now! For that clip from Starving Gaza, a new documentary from Al Jazeera English's Fault Lines. We'll be doing a show about that documentary in the coming weeks. Coming up, we will talk about what Israel's endgame is in Lebanon. This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. We'll be back after this.